Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we will be discussing how shady MoviePass truly was last year. The hunt has been called off. Several spoiler-free reviews, and our topic this week, when your childhood heroes are brought back to life. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing today?
Excellent. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Thank you all for voting. Those of you that did. If you didn't vote, I'm not thanking you. Shame. But we are a finalist in entertainment for this year's podcast awards. So thank you guys so much for voting for us.
Yay! Thank you.
And be sure, boy, that did not sound that sounds so forced.
That was like a laugh track, but like a clap track.
I've been watching stuff without laugh tracks. Things are much creepier without them.
Oh, like the Friends one?
I've seen that, and I've watched a couple other ones. It's a creepy thing.
There's more out there.
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff with no laugh tracks. But thanks everybody for voting. We really appreciate it. Be sure to check your email. You might check your spam because if you are selected, some people are selected to actually be in the finalist voting. So be sure to check so you don't miss that because then, you know, you can help us out twice. You know what I'm saying? So be sure to check. Appreciate that. All right. Thanks again for voting. Amanda, congratulations. You're a first time finalist for Veronica's
Yay!
Marshmallows.
And for the Hollywood Outsider.
Yeah, but you never seem to claim that one. So
yes, we'll I do.
John, I don't know. I see you on Twitter a lot and it's a whole lot of Veronica going on.
Yeah. It's pretty true.
It's been hype season though.
I guess it's never hype season for the hoe.
We're just kidding.
Let's go to the news roundup. Here we go. You guys ready? Here's what's been going on for the last week. The Yankees and the White Sox will play a game on the actual Field of Dreams in Iowa next season. That's going to happen. Finally, it only took them 47 years or whatever. Game of Thrones creator Benioff and Weiss locked down a deal with Netflix for close to 200 million smacaronis to create new TV projects. Hopefully they plan the ending a little better. Kurt Russell is returning with Home Alone director Chris Columbus to take on Christmas Chronicles 2. That's right, Kurt Kringle.
Christopher Columbus?
Well, that is his name. His name is Chris Columbus. He's a very famous director.
Fantastic.
Okay. And so we are going to get more Kurt Kringle.
Must be an age issue.
Yeah.
When I first heard that, I didn't know if it was a joke or not. And then I was like, wait a second.
Yes.
Definitely an age issue.
The actual guy who stumbled across America.
And he didn't even find.
Yeah, there are people there.
Let's not give credit to him.
Anyway, Christmas Chronicles 2 is going to come to Netflix with Kurt Russell in the lead. Disney opened up on its plans a bit as was announced that Marvel will take more adult TV fare like Ghost Rider and Hellstrom for Hulu. They're going to have like a terror faction of shows, and they're going to also remake their hits like Home Alone for Disney Plus. Oh, and they scrapped almost all of Fox developing film projects, with the exceptions of the Avatar sequels, because James Cameron demands it, and the Planet of the Apes franchise. Okay, Disney.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, that's a little interesting. G.I. Joe is throwing together another spinoff after the upcoming Snake Eyes, which will focus on an ensemble with a character named Chuckles. Can't wait. Seriously, I can't wait. The Stunt Association is basically going to picket the Oscars because they demand that they finally get their stunt category at the Oscars. I commend you. We've been saying that for years on this show. Stunt coordinators are the backbone of action movies. We love action movies. They deserve to have their due. Period. Well, that's not period because there's an and. And lastly, China's film regulators issued a statement last week suspending mainland films and personnel from attending the Golden Horse Awards. It's kind of known as the Chinese Oscars. And any film submitted will be banned in China, and any actor who attends will be put on a watch list.
What?
That's communist right there. Communism USA. Or communism China.
We're getting close, though. Not yet.
I don't think we're anywhere near there. All right, guys.
But the hunt is an issue.
Of all that, I got a discussion on that point on that one. Of all that stuff, what do you guys think about news this week? What stood out to you of all that?
The Chinese Oscars really scares me. How that's
Like going?
Yeah.
Because you don't speak Mandarin, you don't want to go?
What? Well, no, just the concept of it. So I didn't understand until recently how communist the communism is in China. And now,
I mean, it's like the definition of communism.
It is. It's really bad. It's so terrible. But I didn't understand, like,
you're making it very hard for us to excuse you this week.
I'm being serious, though. I didn't understand how ingrained it was, like, how deep that communism actually went. Because when I was in school, they didn't talk about that stuff. It was all, most of the history that we learned was focused on how great America is and, like, all of the great things that we've done.
That's right. Hyphen everything. America.
It's actually apostrophe, but
when I do it, it's a hyphen.
Weird. Anyway, so I didn't understand, like, the examples of how the communism runs
in
China.
Hyphen America.
Please stop trying.
Okay.
And so now that I'm seeing how this is impacting for even like entertainers, and I guess I'm more adult too, where I can think about this and I can, you know, I don't know. I can actually physically understand what this means for the people who are living in that country and how it affects their lives and the workers and everything like that. It's terrifying. And I feel so bad for all of those people who are trying to just be part of this entertainment industry and celebrate themselves and celebrate these awards. And if they do, they're basically on a blacklist.
They disappear, man. Was it Fan Bingbing last year that disappeared because she didn't pay her taxes? Or something? Yeah. She disappeared for months to a year. Like, nobody knew where she was because she was in a Chinese prison.
So what did she say when she was found, when she came
out? I'm going to start paying my taxes.
He's paraphrasing, but I think that's exactly what she said.
Yeah. I mean, she lives in a country where that is how things are done. If you're going to return to that country, unless she's going to, you know, beg for amnesty in another country, she's going to have to deal with that. Unfortunately, that is how China is decided, unless there is some kind of uprising, which I hear there might be. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in China right now, but this is definitely them demonstrating their power over the people.
Yeah, and that's hefty.
Well, and they control the entire film business over there. Even Hollywood. Hollywood has no say in anything that happens there. They have to beg to get their movies there, and they only get 25% of the cut back, which in the US or other countries, they usually get 50 to 60%, especially opening weekend. China, 25%. And they're like, and you're going to be happy with it.
I guess that's what I should have clarified. Like, those are the sorts of examples that I didn't understand how deep rooted the communism was and how it impacted the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And that was one thing that I just recently learned about. And I say recently, like within the last year, because I didn't understand how it impacted the entertainment industry. And it's, man, that's terrifying. I couldn't imagine meeting those people.
Huh.
Huh.
I she left no room in that at all for the talk about it. So let's go right into, how about the stunt actors, huh?
I am so happy, man. Like, this literally just hit before we started recording. It's my dream. I know it's weird because it's an award. Who really cares? I mean, well, we care. We just talked about how we really want to win one. But, you know, it means something to people that put the effort in. And the thing that's always been insulting is that the stunt people that are doing that job just don't get recognized. They do on the TV side. There is an Emmy for stunt coordinator, but there isn't anything in the film side. It just makes no sense.
Everybody but the stunt coordinators. You design a little costume, you get an Emmy, or you get an Oscar. You design a piece of CG animation, you get an Oscar. You risk your life to make something look awesome, no Oscar.
Well, and that's the thing that blows my mind is that these are the people who have made everything look so amazing and make all of these actors that we admire, majority of them, Tom Cruise excluded, look so cool on screen because they're not the ones doing most of this stuff and they're literally risking their lives and they get no recognition for it on the film side, which is, I would argue, probably the more dangerous side of things because that's really when I feel like they take things to the extreme because mm-hmm. they have the ability to. And yeah, we have been saying this for a long time. Like, they deserve those awards for the Oscars. I can't believe that with everything, all of the backlash that they've gotten over the years recently, that this hasn't come up sooner, that they didn't take any of this criticism about needing to put these stunt performers in a category. They never took it up before. So I'm interested to see how the Oscars are actually going to respond to this potential protest.
How many times in one episode are we going to blow our mind?
I don't know, but I'm going for 5.
You're going for five? Because we're two down so far.
Full-on lobotomy explosion.
Excited.
That's what I'm going for.
Man.
That's
what I'm going for. You want me to bring energy. I've brought energy.
There you go. You know what I want is I want to see the Yankees and the White Sox play in the Field of Dreams. And that's I know cool. If you never saw the movie, it's probably not as cool to you. But if you are a fan of the movie, that's pretty phenomenal. But they're finally going to do. They should have done it years ago, but finally going to do that. That's very cool.
I really love that movie. I'm glad that they're going to do something like that.
That's a really cool piece of history.
What would you pay?
Well, I would pay anything. I'd just wait till it comes out on streaming or something.
Like, I don't want to witness it. I just want to watch it.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah, I don't want to actually be there in the heat and the stickiness with all the bugs and stuff. I deal with that enough. I just want to see it on my TV screen like I saw the movie, as it's meant to be.
Actually, I think I'm just going to watch the movie again, probably.
Right.
Because the ghosts are a lot cooler than watching baseball for 3 hours. Let's be honest. All right. Let's get into this one. You got to talk about it. The Hunt is the latest casualty to real-life issues because of the shootings in El Paso and Dayton. What happened was Universal Studios has elected to cancel the release of their film. And they issued a statement, which I think I should read. While Universal Pictures had already paused the marketing campaign for The Hunt, I got to pause this stupid video that they have. It's like an ad. Okay. While Universal Pictures has already paused the marketing campaign for The Hunt, after thoughtful consideration, the studio has decided to cancel our plans to release the film. We stand by our filmmakers and will continue to distribute films in partnership with bold and visionary creators like those associated with the satirical social thriller. But we understand that now is not the right time to release the film. We should point out that the film is written partially by Damon Lindelof, and it's a Blumhouse movie, which is they created Get Out and tons of other horror movies that we like right now.
It's also based off a novel as well, or a short story.
Yeah, it's based off a short story. And it's also, I'm sure, very close to the Most Dangerous Game, Hard Target. I really was hoping Jean-Claude Van Damme would get a cameo in this bad boy, or Lance Henriksen, they'd just be running through with that Louisiana hair.
Ice-T.
Ice-T, Surviving the Game. A lot of movies have tackled this. It's basically...
The Purge.
Kind of, yeah. Purge is in a way, but it's basically prisoners are dropped off and they have to... There's a hunt on... site for those prisoners, and they start taking it back to the hunters. It's the haves versus the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
The movie was canceled because of the shootings. There was a whole thing on Fox News. Apparently, our president tweeted in. That caused more of a reaction. So what say you, John, in terms of canceling the film? Do you think this is the right way to handle it? Do you feel like this is censorship in some way, like some are claiming? What do you feel?
I feel like that if this was any other period that we've been through in time, right now, it is a matter of public safety to cancel this movie. I want to be able to say that this is dumb and we shouldn't have to do this sort of thing. And this is, it's a movie. We should be able to experience it and enjoy it. But there are too many people who have been exposed to these articles that paint the movie as being as attacking them. And these people are lately up and shooting people as much as they want. So yeah, a matter of public safety. I don't blame them for shutting down the movie, or at least putting it on the back burner for a while.
All right, Amanda, what do you think about this?
This is a hard topic because I can see both perspectives and I understand them both and I sympathize with them both. Where on one hand, you really want to try to be as sensitive to something that's really important and something that we need to be addressing in many different ways. But I also worry, are we starting to then put these sorts of violence in our actual communities and putting that on the responsibility of entertainment? Now, I do believe that entertainment has some form of a responsibility, but I worry that we're going to start to incorrectly, without any science backing, start to tie violence in real life to what we're seeing on television or in video games. And I don't want that correlation to be there when the science doesn't back it up necessarily. You know, there's no causation that's tied by science to say that these things are actually influencing. You know, I think I would rather see us spending our energy and efforts on mental health and figuring out ways to help people or even putting the money into the researching it further. But I just worry that there's a fine line between being sensitive and being cautious and starting to make people believe that there is an actual correlation between these sorts of things.
there's 2 points I want to make. One, it's I don't consider the censorship because the studio themselves decided to pull it.
Yeah, that's their choice.
Censorship is when someone else says you can't play. China would say you're not playing this movie. That's censorship. That's not what's happening here. The studio chose to withdraw it. Do they feel pressure from other parties and other members of the press and presidents? Yes, probably. But on the same token, it's Hollywood. I don't know how much faith I would put that would matter to them. I mean, they don't really care much what the president seems to think for most of the time. I really, truly feel it's mostly because of a sensitivity issue. I just don't get the timing. You know, this isn't a new thing. This is the one thing that I just don't get why people are acting like this is new. Every time there's a major tragedy and something is going to open close to when that tragedy happened and it's reminiscent, they cancel it or they change it or they edit it. 9/11. I mean, how many things changed because of that? The 24 premiere canceled showing an entire plane crash because of 9/11. Studios are always trying to protect their audience and make sure that they get some distance from real life tragedy because they don't want people going into their movies that are meant for entertainment. And the whole time they're thinking about some horrible tragedy. Mm-hmm. They didn't want that.
Parkland.
Yeah, exactly. Parkland. It's just a smart, it's a business move. Yes. And it's also being sensitive for society move. So I've seen a lot of diatribes and a lot of blogs and op-eds and pieces that are written and, you know, blaming one party or another because of this. This happens every time some tragedy in the world happens. It happens all the time. This is not new. This is not new. It's not strictly political. A lot of it has to do with the studio saying it's really close to the time frame. We don't want our audience to walk into this and just, you know, walk out. On a personal level, I think it's far enough away the way that we are these days. I mean, I definitely don't mean to sound insensitive, but we kind of forget about things or we turn a blind eye to things very quickly in this country. You know, our turnover ratio, our rage gauge or whatever is very minimal. You know, we're getting mad about something else next week.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie wasn't due to come out until September 27th. So I don't know. Is it really going to be? And I'm obviously nothing meant insensitive to anyone who knows anyone or anything else. I'm talking about people that have no direct contact with this particular topic on either side. Are they really going to be affected by the movie coming out a month and a half from now? I don't even know that they're going to be thinking about it a month and a half from now. And I don't mean that to be insensitive. I just think that's the honest truth.
Well, I think the people who are obviously impacted by it are going to be thinking about it continuously and being able to see that in a lot of different forms of media. But the people, again, like you're saying, the people who weren't impacted directly, while they have those moments of recollection and, you know, maybe even reflection on what happened over the last month or so, no, I don't think that it would be that impactful. But I think that it was brought to attention is really what caused it to be ignited and canceled. Because if it didn't receive the attention on it that it had, I don't think it would have been an issue because, quite honestly, we have so many shootings regularly in our country at this point. Seeing that uprise.
Well, then I would say if that were the case, then much like, ironically, a Lindelof ending, that would be lame and a weak way to handle it.
Oh, boy. You went there.
I mean, if that's the reason, if it were because of the reasons you just explained, that it was because public pressure was mounting. That would be a weak response, I would say.
That's kind of
if it's
how
because
I
of sensitivity,
it,
I have 100% respect for the choice.
Yeah, because
we're not in their mindset, obviously.
Right. I'm going based off of the timelines that I've seen, and their reaction came after they got a lot of pressure and a lot of heat on the movie. And they had decided to delay, and a delay, I feel like, is a normal response to mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, they even canceled it.
They did not cancel it. They canceled it once they got a lot of public press and publicity that was very negative and very down on the fact of why are you releasing this given the circumstances. So to me, I read this situation based off that timeline as not we're trying to be sensitive. Their sensitive response, I think, was delaying it. It seemed much more that it was a response to public response and media response.
Well, they had dialed down the marketing quite a bit.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, I think that was their sensitivity gauge. And then I think once they started to really, they didn't want the bad publicity. And it wasn't worth, this movie to them was not worth dealing with all of this.
Not right now, no.
No.
Push it off.
Yeah. So they just decided to cancel.
Yeah, it's a touchy subject. And it was, when I looked up into the reason as to why they would have canceled a lot of these things, I'm going to lean on this idea that it would have been more, it's a lot in a ways a matter of public safety, because some of the people who were complaining about this movie were complaining about this movie because they saw themselves as being the hunted. And it's interesting that people would actually complain about this whole idea that, oh, this movie is bad because the people who are being hunted look like me, and that's a problem, and that's why they were upset. And yet we've had movies like The Purge or The Game and all these other movies that were along the same subject line, and nobody once cried foul about it, because they're forgetting that the idea of the movie isn't a certain group of people. It's the haves versus the have not.
I don't know. I mean, I guess they're painting it as a certain kind of movie. Like, it's, I don't know. The have-nots are the ones that are coming back and kicking ass. So that wouldn't that be uplifting in a way?
Usually, but that's not what's happening here. The have-nots, in this case, the people who see themselves as the have-nots are seeing themselves as being attacked.
According to The Hollywood Reporter, the original title of the movie was Red State versus Blue State, and in a line of dialogue, one of the liberal elites declares, "Nothing better than going out to the manor and slaughtering a dozen deplorables." That's presumably a reference to Hillary Clinton's comment in 2016 that half of Trump's voters belong in a basket of deplorables. The reporter also writes that victims of the hunt were chosen, quote-unquote, because they expressed anti-choice positions or used the N-word on Twitter.
Oh, you read it right.
According to The Hollywood Reporter.
Okie dokie. Well, that's enough of that. Regardless, I mean, movie delays are going to happen. Movie cancellations are going to happen. It's a tough time. When things like this happen, it's a very tough time for everybody. So the studios have to be conscious of that. Regardless of why it came to light, we're a rage culture. We're mad about something every other week. Every side and every group is mad about something.
One
side can't point at the other side and say, you were madder than me. You're all mad all the time. So let's all come together and have a group hug, and then we'll hate stuff together.
We can just stay off the internet.
Like Lady in the Water. Can we hate that together?
No, I love that movie. Shut up, you monster.
See, there's more hate.
I'm offended.
All right, let's go back to something we can all agree sucks. Summer is coming to an end, so we're going to talk about what we now know about MoviePass, the app that ruined our summer last year. And unfortunately, it continues to disrupt a lot of people in 2019 that are still members on there, because they still actually have quite a few members. So here are a couple of the shady practices that we now know that MoviePass used, thanks to a report from Business Insider. Are you guys ready for this?
Oh, man.
Absolutely. All right. Let's do this.
Let's have a fun little run down history lane. On August 15th, 2007, the unlimited movies for $9.95 went into effect at MoviePass. Now, I just want to say I was a member for 6 years, I think, where I paid like $20, $30, $40 is what it got up to, and I was fine with it.
I paid $40, too, for like 2 or 3 years. I was cool with that.
Because you go 4 movies a month easily, then it's covered. Paid, yeah. So within 48 hours, accounts quadrupled and got to the point of 250,000 accounts were added every single month. It got huge. Got to a point where the vendor making the MoviePass cards didn't have enough plastic and had to call on its competitors to fulfill all the card orders.
My gosh.
Yeah, crazy. So they started to realize, hey, we're running low on funds. What? I don't know how that could happen. Because if you don't know how this works, just because they're charging $9.95, they still have to pay the theater exactly what the ticket costs. So if you buy 16 tickets in a month, they had to pay for 16 tickets. So they're paying 100, let's say roughly $10 a ticket, $160 versus your $10. So they're losing $150 on that month. See
kind of
I mean?
Banking on the people who don't use it.
Who sign
but
up and don't use it.
But would have to be like one, they would have to see 0 movies or $1 $5 movie.
Exactly. Which, if you can get unlimited, why would you go to the $5 movie?
Exactly.
Where all the kids are screaming? I don't think so. So here's when it started. Around the time Infinity War came out, MoviePass began limiting users' access. And CEO Mitch Lowe, he seems like a delightful son of a bitch, he actually ordered that the passwords of a small percentage of power users be changed, preventing them from logging onto the app and ordering tickets. I remember that happening.
I remember it happening too.
Yep. Later, when Mission Impossible Fallout released, half of the subscribers were intentionally frozen out of the app, and MoviePass blamed it on a technical issue. It was. They froze them. Technically. CEO sumbitch Mitch Lowe, he implemented a tripwire then, which was an automatic shutdown mechanism for any time MoviePass went past a certain amount balance. When money ran out, subscribers would see a prompt that told them there are no more screenings at their theaters that day.
Also, I remember that too. I
also remember that.
I think that happened more to you than it did me, though. Well, I remember you asking because you knew I had MoviePass.
Yeah.
If some things were blocked out for me, and I was like, I don't have that, and you're like,
it's like, I know there's 8 more showings of this. Why is it saying none?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it would be like 10:30. Well, who's going to 10:30, man? I need fun. I'm old. I gotta go to bed early. The tripwire that I just mentioned started at a few million dollars, but eventually it wound down to a few hundred thousand. So basically, you know, a few hundred people went to a movie that day, locked up. You son of a bitch low. Maybe it's bitch low. Maybe CEO bitch low is what we should call him.
I like that.
Yeah, that's better than Mitch, right? I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just saying it falls off the tongue. Not rolls, just falls. Like maybe
it's just clip-plop.
Mm-hmm.
Like movie passes going.
Like movie pass did off a cliff. Yeah. Now they have drastically cut back on how many you can see and where. Now the site is and the program are being totally revamped again in yet another effort to succeed. In the meantime, AMC, they implemented their own version of it because, you know, they can recoup some of their money because they sell concessions, so they can recoup any losses.
Well, and theirs
there
is also through their theater. They're not like to every theater.
Right. Well, I'm saying because you're coming to their theater, they'll mm-hmm. recoup a lot of their losses on concessions. It makes financial sense where MoviePass didn't. They had no way to recoup it. They had planned on getting some advertising that they never got. Great plan. Worked out great for all of us. Regal Cinemas, all the cinemas are coming up with their own plan. So now here we are. They're currently still revamping the system. It isn't done yet. A compliance counsel at the U.S. Department of Justice told Business Insider that MoviePass's behavior is certainly unethical and could be illegal.
Could be?
Could be. Well, they got to go through them still. I mean, you know, they have to see what evidence they have of bitch low. Now I'll ask you guys, what do you think, now that you have the entirety of MoviePass and what they actually did, what do you think of the program? Do you want to join?
Oh my God. It makes me so enraged because I remember on our Facebook group, in private messages, on the show, like there was a lot of defending of the MoviePass here on my behalf. Like I was rooting for MoviePass. I know Aaron was rooting for MoviePass because he's had it longer than all of us.
Yeah.
And it was a really great program for what it started as, what it actually truly should have stayed as. And it just went so downhill so fast. And I still tried to support it for as long as I could before I inevitably was just like, this is terrible. Like their customer service became like a huge problem. And I still tried to defend it just because there for a little while, just because there was such like an upheaval amount of people that were trying to get through. And now that I know all of the issues were them causing the issues, it makes me more enraged because if you're causing the issues, at least have enough customer service people available and like a way for those people to contact you.
Well, it's obvious that they didn't want us to contact them.
Very clear. They shut off their phone number. They used to. Do you remember when they had the phone number?
Yeah.
And you could call them to have them let you into the movie if there was ever an issue with the app. Well, they stopped that phone number, just like kind of shut off.
Yeah, they got to a point where you'd have better odds making a paper airplane and flying it into their office window.
Basically. And so now here we are. All this time later, and I'm so behind. I want to say that I'm so behind AMC's program because I think it's a fantastic program.
It is a great program.
And it works.
And I'm sure the other ones are too. I don't
so flawlessly. Yeah. Right. It's just what's in our area. But I feel so bad for the people who don't have these like Regals and AMC's in their area where they have to go to these like kind of mom and pop shop sort of theaters where they only have MoviePass. And so they're kind of screwed or they just need to pay full price. I would just pay full price at this point. Just well, to pick
just
it.
Just on principle.
MoviePass.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, you want to go see a movie and it's like, okay, well, I want to go the third Thursday of the month at 3:13. That's the only option I have to see Endgame.
Oh, wait, sorry. They took
Endgame's,
it away.
Endgame's on video. Yeah. That's where we play it. I don't know what to tell you. That's the only time you can go. Wait, what? That's how MoviePass works now.
They have a VHS screening.
That would be fantastic.
A VHS screening. It's really just a big open room with a bunch of kids on mats watching it on a big TV. That's all it is.
Yeah,
I love it.
That's, yeah.
So what do you think, John? Because you've never been on the MoviePass plan. So what did you think?
You know, I didn't think much of it. And when you guys were pushing it, it was one of those things where I pushed against it just because I know I'm not really much of a joiner when it comes to stuff like that. you guys were really happy and excited about it, but we started seeing these numbers roll in about how many people were picking on, jumping on it so quickly. And I just, like, I know how to, like, I'm only good at basic math, and basic math told me that this can't work.
No, can't.
So, and not only that, but the theaters that I'd love to go to didn't support it anyways. So what was I left with? To just watch you guys enjoy it for as long as you could. I don't know. It's just, it's silly to me, because as soon as the company realized that they can't keep doing this, they should have shut their doors. They should have done something. They should have shuttered everything up instead of continuously taking money from people and then trying to redirect the money, so, or play a shell game with the money, so that, yeah, you know, come this way, watch the girl, the queen, da, 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 you know. It's just, it's silly. They really should have just immediately stopped everything and found a way to restructure it.
One thing I feel really bad about is originally when it first started, which is I think the first inkling I had that I wanted to join, was that Ben Affleck was an investor in MoviePass initially. He was an initial investor in MoviePass. And that's one of the reasons that I even heard about it, because it wasn't like being advertised or anything. And I joined. And now all I can picture is that sad Affleck meme.
Were you
standing by the back door of something smoking a cigarette?
Yeah, I just picture sad Affleck as just like, man, nothing goes right for me. This is like Batman versus Superman all over again. I can't understand. I'm sure he pulled out of it long ago, but.
Sorry. That distracted me. But also the thing with Bitch Low.
Such a child.
I am. He was an executive for Netflix, and he was the president of Redbox. Like, he's been with successful companies and businesses that had like a really great innovative idea and was super successful. And then he just shit all over this, like just destroyed it as much as possible.
Call it poop ass.
Well, didn't they even try to buy movies so that they can have the movies show up and have people go to their movies, which actually isn't a bad move. It's just that they had to buy better movies.
Well, they bought America's Animals from South By, which Brian and I saw at South By. And it was a really good movie. And it never really saw the light of day because MoviePass bought it and ruined that too.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Because they did that too late. Like, that was them trying to salvage things. And at that point, there were so many people enraged with the constant customer service issues and things not working and just all of these issues that they were having, that people didn't care that they were starting to, like, look into advertisements as a way to profit and a way to, like, going through and buying these movies and saying, hey, you can go see these movies, because they were so mad that they couldn't use their card for the stuff that they actually wanted to. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was just way too late. They just waited way too long. These are things, you should have had these ideas implemented before you started to drop the price to see, like, hey, we've got advertisers in here or something like that, to try and, like, start it and see if that starts to grow your business and profit enough for it for you to drop it down that low.
And low. So here's what I, bitch low. Here's what I would suggest. Let's throw these two last topics together. We create a movie called The Hunt. Maybe change a letter. And we drop
What's
in...
the letter we change?
You can use your mind.
See you next Tuesday.
Oh, my God. It took me... Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Maybe...
You know, I got the sexual innuendo, but when it came to the swear word, it took me a minute.
Not a word I'll say out loud, but just use your head. Well, or have John explain it to you, whichever works best for you. So you have this movie, and basically you have a bunch of fictional, hyper-realized reimagining of MoviePass employees. And they're the ones being hunted. And then it's a fun movie for everyone.
Or it could just be Bitch Low that gets hunted.
It's hypothetical, fictional,
a hypothetical, fictional
Bitch Low.
Bitch Low.
Yeah.
Well, Bitch Low doesn't exist.
He is a fictional character. Bitch low. And everybody he works with. Bye. The executives, because it's not the people.
I was going to say, not the employees.
The people on the floor. They're just doing their job.
Can you imagine how horrible those people must have felt and how awful every single day must have been for them?
Oh, I'm sure.
As regular employees.
Hey, what's your job? I work at McDonald's. Yeah, that's what I do now. That's what I do now. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to talk about my real job. Oh, that'd be interesting. All right, well, that's MoviePass, and I think we can finally write that baby off. They keep saying they're coming back. I don't see how they could. And honestly, at this point, I don't want them to.
Their name is so discredited.
To me, it's like I get that that jerk, you know, like I had a lobotomy at one point. And now people say, you want to go to the doctor? And I go, I just get that jolt. That's what I feel when I hear MoviePass now. All right, Patreon. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. So if you would like to support The Hollywood Outsider, we have $3 tier where you get a bonus monthly podcast called Bad Movie Night, where we discuss a movie that critics or others deem a bad movie. We just covered the Fast and Furious series. At $5, there's a Bad Movie Night Plus. You get an exclusive monthly bonus episode where we talk about things we wouldn't talk about on a normal show. Get a lot more in depth. And there's other perks. I mean, if you different tiers have different perks. Now you understand what it is. If you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And thank you to our newest supporter, Jose. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Enthusiastic.
Gracias.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
What, you're Hispanic? Is that offensive?
No, just the way you said it was kind of bad.
Okay.
John should
gracias!
Be able to say it.
No. Is there a correct way to say gracias? My wife's Hispanic, bitch. I hear gracias all the time. It doesn't count.
She does not say thank you to you that much. You don't do that much for her to say
thank you.
She
never says thank you to me, but I hear her say it.
Well, no, your pronunciation of it has been like four different pronunciations of it since you said it.
How are you supposed to say it, though?
It's everyone is slightly different, but they put the right emphasis on the right syllables. So it's like gracias.
Ooh.
How did I say it in much different than that?
You sound very white and he does not.
That offended me.
You should be because you offended all of the Hispanic culture by saying gracias.
Like the very first time you were like Garcias.
I did not.
You did too. Play back the tape.
I have a Hispanic friend, John.
It's like, yeah.
Is that what you call your wife now? Your
no,
friend?
That's what I'm calling John. He's right here. He's my shield. I'm ducking behind him. All right, let's go to a spoiler-free reviews. Scary Stories to Tell.
I'm a shitty shield.
You are. You just kind of step out of the way. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. This is a collection of three books that contain numerous short horror stories written by Alan Swartz and originally illustrated by Stephen Gamel. Here, they have kind of taken that and wrapped it into one tale. It's 1968 in Mill Valley, a small American town where for generations the shadow of the Bellows family has loomed large. It is in their abandoned mansion on the edge of town that Sarah, a young girl with horrible secrets, turned her tortured life into a series of scary stories that she etches into a book once anyone dares touch this cursed book. A small group of teenagers learn the hard way that these stories will come true and kill each and every one of them if they do not find a way to stop the already deceased Sarah, which makes it a hard problem to solve. You know, because she's already dead. This was directed by Andre Ulvrodal and stars Zoe Margaret Coletti, Michael Garza, Gabriel Rush, and Amanda and I both saw it.
Yep.
So let me ask you, this is PG-13 horror. It's based on a bunch of children's books.
Wait, this was PG-13?
Yeah, this is PG-13.
You saw it.
They don't ever card me. I guess I look too old, so I never get carded for rated R movies, so I thought this was just a rated R movie I didn't get carded
for. It's okay. It's not like you need to research for this at all. We just show up and start talking.
Hey, you're the lead. I'm the reviewer.
It's darker than Goosebumps, but still, it's not quite Stephen King. So you read these, Amanda. How close to the source material were the stories?
Well, I mean, the characters, from what I can recall, because I saw these or I read these when I was a child, but it wasn't, from my recollection, it wasn't like a continuous story the way the movie is. The movie seemed to kind of flow as like one, and it tried to work together, and it's more of like mini stories that are kind of involved in the books. So that I feel like is a little bit different, but it still works for this as a movie, as a production trying to make this seem seamless. But the characters still seemed familiar.
The horrific characters, the
villains. Yeah, the look and stuff like that. Like, that's the imagination. And it was very, there were moments that genuinely creeped me out the way that the book did. And the book had, or the books, had a lot of controversy because of the graphic nature. And these were actually, like, often at those Scholastic book fairs. That's where I read them, is we would get them from the little fair and then we'd read them, or we would have them in the library. But they're pretty graphic for young children, I guess, is what the controversy was. So I think this still held up pretty well in comparison.
So this features a lot of practical effects. In fact, the way I understand it, 90% of this is practical, with CGI only being used to emphasize most of the stuff, and a couple scenes where they had to use CGI, like Jangly Man when he fell apart. That's obviously CGI. What did you think of the creature design? I loved Troy James, the contortionist who plays the Jangly Man, which is kind crazy. Of, it's a really hard character to describe, but he's this creepy, horrific looking monster who can reassemble himself and crab walks backwards and forwards and upside down and sideways and everything else, and crab walks and crawls through like through jail,
the cell bars.
Yeah. And I mean, he can get in any place. He was a horrific creature, and a lot of that is practical. So what did you think of the creature designs here? Was it very reminiscent of when you were a kid, what you read as a kid? They look like those?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it felt real and it felt authentic and it didn't feel cheesy, which I think is what we often fear when we have these practical effects. We're like, oh, God, is this going to be so cheesy and just low budget that we can tell it's somebody who's doing this and it's not CGI'd, and we prefer it if it were just CGI'd. But I felt like it was so, the way that it was shot and the way that the creatures acted and the way they approached every scene creeped me out. That's why I'm like, I genuinely didn't think this was a PG-13 movie, because there were a lot of moments where I was like, nah, man, no. Mm-mm.
I actually agree with you, especially Jangly Man. And there's a couple other scenes where I can't believe you can get away with that now in a PG-13 movie. But
yeah.
Hey.
But they seem to know how to stretch the lines and the boundaries the same way the books did. And that,
because
yeah,
really they don't
appreciate.
Actually show blood, and there's no gore. I mean, it's all more implied and insinuated than it is actually.
It's psychological. Yeah. Like, they know how to,
and hideous design. So I mean, they look horrifying, but they don't really do a whole lot of horrifying things.
Right. They put you in a position where it's almost kind of like if you were to get buried in a coffin, that feeling, that suffocating feeling of like, am I ever going to get out of here? Am I going to survive this?
No, because that would never happen to me. I make them kill me before I get in there.
But do you understand what I'm saying? That feeling of like that, it's just to build tension. It's so much tension that they're building with these characters, and they feel so real, and they don't need to actually harm anyone and do anything. I mean, granted they do, but like they don't need to do anything that's super visually graphic, because mentally and psychologically you're so tormented of the fact of like, okay, it's here and now it's there, or it's doing this and now it's doing that. And it just keeps manifesting in different ways and appearing in different areas. So that I thought was a really great thing that they did.
Yeah, there was only one creature, and I don't want to give this one away, but when the boy's in the hospital and he's trying to escape in the hospital, that creature looked a little cheesy to me. It looks exactly like it does in the book. I just don't think it translates well from the book to the screen. So overall, how did you feel about the movie? Were you scared?
Well, no, not scared.
Or unnerved?
Like, I was, you know, I had the tension. I had that feeling of anxiety. There was a couple moments that I can specifically remember. And one of them that creeped me out the most, or built the most tension in me, was actually a character that I was never scared by from the books, which is like the blobby person who, like, they're in the red room and like the red in the hallways.
Oh, yeah. You were scared by that one?
It built so much tension because I kept the
See,
way
that's the
that
one
it was
I laughed out loud at.
Yeah, but like, it's not even the character. Like, the character doesn't look great, but that scene, the way that it was shot, kept
it's
building
a monster
so
gradually
much.
Closing in on the character, yeah.
And I kept, like, to me, it was like, okay, he's going to turn here. And like, of course, this character is going to keep coming up. This monster creature is going to keep happening. And it doesn't look terrifying, but they did such a good job with the production that it was like, it genuinely built tension in me of, is this person going to escape? And that's something that, like, that particular situation, the situations that they bring up in the movie and in the books are situations that, like, genuinely would scare me. So it does build the tension, but visually it's not. Like, it's not like the creatures really scare me too much. I think it was really just like the contortionist that creeped me out the most, because I was like, ugh.
Yeah,
I didn't think that was real.
That guy did a lot of that. I watched the making of it. I'm like, I thought that was all fake. Yeah. I really did think that was all fake. So the Jangly Man near the end of the movie, when you start seeing this particular character, get impressed, because most of that is real. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
I did love the cinematography. I saw a couple of reviews in there, because I always read reviews after. I never read them before, where people were complaining about the cinema. I think it looked gorgeous, especially the first half of the movie. I thought it was shot beautifully, and Andre did a wonderful composure with lighting. Yeah. So he did a wonderful mix of darkness and lighting, and using the light to amplify the tension. Because I obviously, it's not a gory movie, so he's got to use what he can. And I think for the most part it worked.
Well, and I think that goes back to some of the old horror movies that we're used to from, like, even mm-hmm. going back to Psycho. There wasn't blood. We didn't need to see blood, but we were built with the tension and we were built with what the director was able to do with the camera and with the casting to make this very real and very creepy without actually showing you anything.
So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark? And also, is this, would you say this is for everyone or this is for younger fans, older fans?
You know, I think all ages could enjoy it. I don't think that it's built necessarily just for the nostalgia of, you know, people my age who are in their mid to late 20s or even early 30s, because these books came out in the early 90s.
Right.
Right early 90s. So I still think people now, like younger kids now, our theater was filled with a lot of teenagers and they seem to really enjoy and get creeped out by it. But it's not one for all horror fans, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So what would you give it if $10 full price?
I'm going to give it $6.
$6. All right. I'm going to go $5.50.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is because I didn't like the ending at all.
Mm. Okay.
To me, in my horror movies, I liked enough stakes are very important. I feel like they weren't that important.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would tell you a fun little story. John, you can come back to the conversation because, you know, you might enjoy this.
What? I'm sorry.
So I saw this one by myself. And it was packed. There was a lot of families, a lot of teenagers. And in front of me, there were three teenagers, right? Three kids. So as soon as they sit down in front of me, I'm like, oh, crap. All I'm going to see is a glow the entire movie. I'm just going to see this neon glow because they're all going to have to check their friggin' Facebook status every 5 minutes. And they'll know, hey, that's the best part of the movie.
Take a Snapchat. Oh, my God. Yeah. Those people are the worst.
So that's what I'm expecting. And then next to me, I've got a mom, a dad, and their three young boys. I assume they stole them, one of the two. And they're sitting next to me. And I assume family. He seems like an upstanding dude. She seems like an upstanding lady. They're sitting down. I'm like, all right, they're going to take control. It'll be all right. This will be all right. It'll be the teenagers that are going to suck. Well, one of the teenagers, as soon as the movie starts, one of the teenagers starts flipping through his phone, doing a Facebook or whatever he's doing. And his buddy on one side and then his buddy on the other side both turned to him and said, put your phone away. We're here to watch a movie. Swear to God.
Ooh.
And I went down and I high-fived one of them.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. I'm like, God bless you.
And in the middle of the movie?
Yeah.
I mean,
the credits hadn't started.
Oh, okay.
But then next to me, in the middle of the movie, the mom, upstanding mom, she starts texting somebody. And then dad loudly asks her to stop. It keeps asking her throughout the movie until I finally had said, hey, mom. And I said, mom, hey, mom, can you put your phone away? Because I'm having a hard time seeing the movie that's playing that I paid for. She's like, ah. And then gave me that look like I was a dick.
Really?
But the teenagers were like, yes, please. And they were sitting in front of me, so they couldn't even see. So that was nice. It was a nice little trip to the theater.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Expectations were
reversed.
Wow.
I feel like I often find the mom parents to be the worst. I don't know.
Well, it's because they're only taking their kids to a movie, hoping that they would just shut up for an hour and a half to leave them alone.
That's fair.
And that's when they think it's their phone time. You know, they can go ahead and text their margarita recipes or, you know, whatever lawn boy that they're sleeping with to their friends and call it a day.
Yeah, John, you took that up a notch. All right, speaking of, let's talk about Dora the Explorer.
All right, Dora in the Lost City of Gold.
What was that for?
I don't know. I just felt like doing it.
Okay.
Dora, a teenage explorer, leads her friends on an adventure to save her parents and solve the mystery behind the Lost City of Gold. This is directed by James Bobin. It stars Isabella Moner, Eugenio Derbez, and Michael Pena. So, Aaron, you went to go see this, as mm-hmm. every good Aaron should. You know what? I've been hearing a lot of stories where this is being compared to something as crazy as Goonies. What do you think?
Whoa. I don't know about Goonies, but I will say that I went with my niece, so I was already and we walked into the theater, and she said I look like John Cena. So right away,
you're suckered.
Right away, I'm on board. Whatever this kid wants, this kid's getting. She got candy, she got popcorn, she got the whole deal. This kid is top notch. Love her. So we sit down and watch the movie. I don't know anything about Dora the Explorer. I never watched the cartoons. I just didn't care. She wanted to see it. I saw the trailer. I liked Isabella Moner in Instant Family last year. Mm. I was just looking forward to seeing what she did with this. And it looked like kind of an Indiana Jones kind of tale. which I'm a sucker for Indiana Jones, always. We sit down, and I will tell you, Isabella Moner is an instant family. She plays a very angsty, troubled kid who's trying to, you know, find her way and everything else. That's not what Dora is. Dora is this eternal optimist, very upbeat. She is wholesome and happy, and she wants to make everybody else happy, and she wants to be confident and honest to herself. She's just like a wonderful character that you never see teenagers play in a movie. Right away, I was impressed, because to me, these kind of characters can become overbearing. They usually get carried away. They're a little cheesy. You know, a lot of it has to do with the actor playing it. Just amplifies the upbeatness to the point where it's annoying. She never goes there. The entire movie, she has this great attitude. This I can do anything. I'm going to try. I'm never going to quit. I am going to do what I have to do. She has this, you know, and her whole mission is she's trying to find her parents who are after this treasure, and she's trying to save them because she understands that they've been kidnapped and she's trying to get to them, etc. Kid never loses her resolve. She's always confident. Just does a great job, and it never got annoying. It was always just like a wonderful thing to watch. One of those things where as I'm watching it, it reminded me of seeing a Shia LaBeouf as a kid or somebody along those lines. Or when you first see that actor that 10 years from now, you just know they're going to be a big thing. Leo DiCaprio is a great example. Saw Titanic. I'm like, this kid's going to be huge. I mean, this movie's big, but he's going to be huge. And he was. She strikes me as that kind of actress, especially because I saw Instant Family and I saw this, and they're polar opposite. And she does such a great job.
Oh, very cool. Well, speaking of people who did, who might or might not have done a good job, James Bobbin, the director, is also known for doing things like Alice Through the Looking Glass, Muppets Most Wanted, the Muppets movie before that, Flight of the Conchords. Does that sort of stuff show in this, or is this something that feels like it's its own?
I mean, Muppets Most Wanted wasn't a bad movie, but Alice Through the Looking Glass was. So, wasn't like that. It's better than that. I mean, it really is like a family version of Indiana Jones with the female hero. That's really what it is. And, you know, you get a little bit of Tomb Raider, you get a little bit, and it's really about a character who isn't interested in treasure hunting. It's all about the history. And also there's a lot of nods to the cartoon. I don't even know the cartoon, but you can tell when there are nods to the cartoon because you hear the little kids that are laughing about it, and they have like a talking backpack, and they have Swiper
no swiping.
Yes, this fox.
He's a monkey.
No, he's a fox.
Oh, he's a fox. Yeah. Where's the monkey?
The monkey is her friend. The monkey is a CGI monkey that's her friend, and she has the CGI fox that's always swiping left.
Yeah.
It's voiced by Benicio del Toro, by the way, which is fantastic.
That is awesome.
And somehow those characters work, and they even work in the cartoon. There's like a whole scene where they work in the actual cartoon, and it makes sense in the movie. So throughout, I think he did a wonderful job of taking a movie I couldn't have cared less about, going in and make it something that I had an absolutely great time with. My niece had an absolutely great... She walked out of there with her cute little backpack, and she wanted to be Dora the Explorer, and she's running around, and she just wants to find history and everything. Like, it reminded me of when I first saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, and how I walked out of there, and my mom must have saw me amped up on sugar and dreams.
All right, so you have said a lot of the nice things about Isabella Moners, but we know that she was in this movie. She was in Instant Family. She was also in Transformers The Last Night, which is where I noticed her for the first time. What do you want to see her do next?
I honestly...
If you could choose.
If I could choose anything? Dora the Explorer 2. I mean, really, I really think this is a great franchise for especially young women. Little girls to young women that are looking for an idol. I mean, it was so great and refreshing to have in any character, not just because she's female, any character where they're this upbeat and wholesome and positive. I love that because you don't see it anymore. Everything is so goddamn angsty, and everything you see, and everybody, we've got problems. Yeah, I want to go to a movie and forget about them. That's what I want once in a while. That's what this movie gave. And everybody in that theater seemed to have a great time. From my wife's mother, who's definitely not spry, to our age, to my niece, who's a little tiny 7-year-old. Everybody had a great time. That's the kind of movie I want to see her do next. She could do anything. She's talented, but I would love to see Dora too.
Can I ask a question real quick before we move on to the score?
Sure.
So in the cartoon, because I watched the cartoon with my little cousins, and I remember Dora always being like, Swiper, no swiping. Like, her voice was just very, you could tell she was talking to an audience, and I felt a little bit of that in the trailer. Did her character still come across like that, where it was very just...
Where she talks to the camera?
Well, it's like the something in her voice where she's like very exclamatory about...
Yeah, a little bit. I really feel it was done well here.
Like, naturally?
They actually have a moment where she talks directly to the camera.
Oh,
and
okay.
And everybody else is like, what the hell are you doing? I mean, it's a really funny moment, actually, because you can tell they must have done that in the cartoon quite a bit.
Yeah.
And they were playing to that. Well, but it was just like a offhanded
She
nod.
Would like unpack the backpack, and then she would tell you to like do some of the things with her. So she was like engaging her.
That's because it starts with her as a little girl, and that's when they do that. So it's kind of like, here's the door you think you're going to get. And then we flash forward 10 more years.
That's cool.
She's trying to save her family. Yeah.
All right, so after all of that, what is your score, Aaron?
Action, heart, humor, and absolutely made for family. So $8 out of 10.
Wow, if you were going to give it anything less, I would have called you out on it because your face said 8.
It's definitely 8.
The whole time you were talking about it, I'm like, that's an $8 movie because I can just see it in your face.
Absolute joy. I would watch it again tomorrow. I had a great time. All right, Good Boys. Now, this is a movie that, Amanda, you caught at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
And is now being released wide. After being invited to a kissing party by the coolest kid in the lunchroom, Max enlists his friends Lucas and Thor to help him figure out how to properly kiss a lady. Could have called me, buddy. I would have helped you out. That came out inappropriately in a way. With many failed Google searches on kissing the intended lips, and inevitably an uncomfortable search using the four-letter word, porn. The boys band together to spy on the cute neighbor girl, Hannah, using Max's out-of-town father's work drone. And of course, it's the one thing Max's father tells him not to touch, which is coincidentally the same thing that is left right out in the open next to a window. It's written and directed by Gene Stupinski, and apparently the drone is a major plot point. So the drone is this driver, the plot driver here, and it seems like this would be John's kind of magic.
I don't like all drones, just as... Like
his?
Yeah.
Yes, you do. You like all drones. The boys need to ensure that the drone is safe. I'm guessing kind of like...
They need to get it back.
Cameron's
right.
car and Ferris Bueller. They're just going to make sure nothing happens to it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a strong enough plot point to hold us for an entire movie, though?
Yes, because it's more than just the drone. The drone really helps set and reinvent some of the plot points to keep it going. But then you have the side story of this party and like the little, you know, kid romance thing. That starts to set things up even further. So it's really just like one of the biggest introductions to get you into the story. It's not utilized through, well, I guess it is utilized through the whole movie, but not as the main plot point through the entire movie.
So is it more like Superbad for prepubescent? I can never say that word.
Prepubescent?
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess yes and no, but it's not like they're setting out to... Because the movie, they are setting out to go to this party. They want to go and they want to kiss girls and they're just trying to be the cool kids because they're obviously not the cool kids. There's only one of them that's cool. And the only reason the other two are coming with is because he asked if he could bring his friends. and I mean, those poor guys. But it's really just about kids having reality unravel in front of them and growing into... They're like middle school because I think they were
preteen years.
Yeah. Kinda. So they're really trying to like understand how friendships work and how bonding works and finding themselves and understanding what's important to them and trying to find their place in life and in school. And it's all of that kind of message is surrounded by the ridiculous hilarity that happens in this movie, the absurdity that happens.
So the humor is raunchy and
oh
absurd.
My God. Yeah. Oh, it's. If you have any problems with, it's not even swear words, it's how derogatory that the content is. Some of it is a little, like there's anal beads. There's kids on sex swings.
There's no kids using anal beads, right? Because that's too far for even me.
Not sexually, but they got their hands on them.
Okay, that's funny. I can go with that.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as they're like, ow, ow, I don't want to see that.
No,
I don't want that in my head. All right, so this movie's about three kid best friends
like little musketeers.
Do they come across as kid actors, or is this like Goonies level of bonding with Jacob Tremblay, Keith Williams, and Brady Noon?
They really do come across like they have been best friends forever. You wouldn't believe that they're not friends, and I kind of think that they've grown to become such great friends because of this movie.
Well, they're actors. They probably locked them in a room and said, hang out for a while. You guys are going to have to...
Yeah, but they had like a natural chemistry, and none of them felt like they were as young as they actually are. I mean, these kids are so young that they're not allowed to watch their own movie yet, because it's so bad and raunchy, and they weren't even... You were there for the Q&A, weren't you? They weren't even allowed to come out. Or did I go to that alone?
I didn't go to that one.
Oh, okay. Well, they weren't even... The kids weren't even allowed to stay out for the Q&A because they had to go to bed because they had school. So they came out on stage.
That's awesome.
Had their bow, and then they left, and then it was like the crew that basically stayed up.
Do they watch out like... They walk out like the saddest group of individuals ever? Like, this is our premiere, and we can't even see our stupid movie?
They didn't look super excited, but they also didn't look super sad, because they seemed to be excited that they were still here for it. But they also were... I think they may have been a little tired. Like, that's their bedtime. It was a late showing. So that was hysterical, though. But
that's a Seth Rogen produced movie, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah. And it's not like high jokes. So I feel like I need to clarify that whenever Seth Rogen is attached to something.
That's fair.
But it is very, very derogatory. Like, I would feel as a grown woman maybe a little uncomfortable seeing this with my mother.
Really?
There's parts of it where
now,
I'm like,
that's how you sell me. Put that in the poster. I would feel very uncomfortable watching this with my mother. I'm in. I want to see this.
With your mother.
And yeah. She'll have a great time.
Yeah, but it's good.
See, because that's always the thing with me. When you have a movie about friendships and pals, I love those as long as the people get along. And then that's why I was just curious.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
So it's rated R, but these are still little kids. So how rated R are we talking?
So
I mean, you said with your mom, but you mean like really?
Well, so they happen to come across situations.
I didn't laugh.
They happen to come across situations that are very naughty, and like it's almost like when you started to find out about those things as a child too, and you're like, as adults, we know, oh my God, please do not touch that. I know what this is. I know what's going to happen, but they don't because they're children. So they have like their innocence still preserved.
I found out over at Terry's house when his dad was out of town, we watched his videos.
Oh, God.
That went south.
Oh, no. But so they have like a very natural innocence to them as children, but they happen to come into these situations that are just so wrong and naughty, and like they just shouldn't be there. And you start to cringe a little bit as an adult where you're like, no, 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 because you know.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
All right. So $10 full price of admission. What do you give Good Boys?
$8.
Nice. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
You should take your kids, go see Dora, leave your kids, go see Good Boys.
Do that, yeah.
All right. Now we've got new releases. Now this is going to be the last new release section until September, because the next 2 weeks we've got some special episodes coming up. So on August 14th, we have Angry Birds 2. August 16th, 47 Meters Down, Uncaged, because we needed a sequel that sounded like a wrestling event. Blinded by the Light, Good Boys. And Where'd You Go, Bernadette, that Cate Blanchett movie, which looks kind of interesting.
Weird. Yeah, it looks weird.
On August 23rd, Angel Has Fallen. That's the third movie in the Olympus Has Fallen trilogy, I guess is what it is, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Overcomer. August 21st, Ready or Not.
That looks good.
Yeah. Which was, again, haves hunting have-nots. Apparently, it's a trend. Don't know why that one didn't get pulled off. On August 30th, Don't Let Go, which is another Blumhouse movie. And if you saw the trailer, it's basically Frequency 2.0.
Sweet.
Well, then we have on Netflix, August 16th, Sextuplets. When expecting father Alan discovers he has five siblings he's never met before, the terror, he decides to reconcile and meet his long-lost family before his baby is born. It's written and produced by Marlon Wayans, so it's probably going to be ridiculous.
He plays every character.
Yes, he does.
If you watch the trailer, it hurts.
So he didn't direct it, but he stars, wrote, and produced it. So it's a Marlon Wayans movie.
Good for him.
It hurts. It still hurts.
Yeah, it does a little bit. But good for him, though. Good for Marlon Wayans for trying to do something positive with his name.
Can I tell you? If I was... make up for your brother Damon, who keeps ruining everything.
You mean... Yeah. No, you're right.
If I was part of the hunt, and I was the one being hunted... And I stumbled across a theater where Sextuplets was playing based on the trailer. I would just stop and let it happen.
Yikes.
Continue.
Take me.
All right. Awake. On August 16th on Video On Demand, a man wakes in a hospital bed with no recollection of who he is and learns that he's wanted by the police for committing a series of murders. Stars Francesca Eastwood and Jonathan Rhys Meyers. Now, if you don't want to see that one.
Reese.
What?
Jonathan Rhys.
I heard it both ways. If you don't want to see that one, go watch, you know, MFA with Francesca Eastwood because it's a better movie. All right.
Okay.
Hoax comes out on August 20th on Video On Demand. It looks kind of Predator-ish a little bit, but low budget because it has Adrian Barbeau and Brian Thompson in it. An investigative team travels deep into the remote Colorado wilderness after a group of young campers are viciously murdered by what may be, John, Bigfoot.
Yes! I am sold on this now. Maybe a Bigfoot's hunting people? Yes!
I know.
Give me more Bigfoot!
It feels like your kind of movie. You should watch the trailer because I think you are going to be sold.
All right, so after that, we have season one of the new Dark Crystal series, Age of Resistance. The series returns to Thra, where the three Gelflings discover the horrifying secrets between the Skeksis' powers, which is killing them, basically. Mm. And this is the whole new creative team, or actually the same creative team, sort of, minus Jim Henson. It's a fully practical effect series, or as much as they can, before they go into some other effects. But yeah, I can't wait for this. This is going to be exciting.
Well, then we have Falling in Love.
Two ends.
Because they're at an inn on Netflix, August 29th.
Got it.
When a San Francisco exec wins a New Zealand inn, she ditches city life to remodel and flip the rustic property with the help of a handsome contractor. It has Christina Milian and Adam DeMose, who is an Australian actor. It's directed by The Cruel Intentions and Just Friends, the guy who helmed all of that, Roger Cumble.
Interesting. Weird. So of all of those, and I mean all of those, what is your pick of the rest of the month, John?
There are so many good picks here, but I'm just going to go ahead and make it easy on myself and say The Hoax.
Over the Dark Crystal, really?
Well, only because it has Bigfoot in it, so I got to check it out.
You really do have a weird thing with monsters.
I really do have a weird thing with monsters.
As soon as I saw the trailer, I'm like, well, I'm adding that to the format because that feels like a John movie. And he probably won't ever hear about it unless we put it in the format because it's definitely video on demand and, you know, they don't get much advertising, sadly. Amanda, what about you? What's your pick?
Well, so I'm going to see Ready or Not because it's a new one, but I am really excited to rewatch Good Boys.
Oh, okay. Technically, I thought you were going for an honorable mention, but I'll give you that one because you already saw
it. Because I already saw it.
Okay. But really, it's Ready or Not.
But really, it's Ready or Not. Right. Yeah.
This is a tough one for me. I thought and thought and thought about it, and I'm probably going to go with Good Boys.
Yay.
Because I just need some raunchy comedy.
You're going to really like it.
I hope so. I hope I don't feel bad about the things I laugh at.
You have to have a soul to feel bad.
It's true. I'll be okay.
Yeah, I don't think you should be concerned. Other people will feel guilty laughing at some of that stuff.
Oh, good. But I won't.
No.
That's all I care about.
Right.
Screw those savages. All right, our From the Outside In topic. When our childhood heroes come back to life, we have all loved something as a kid, right? Some property, book, movie, TV show, comic book, whatever. They were huge when you were a kid. And then as an adult, sometimes those properties just come back as huge movies or major TV shows or some form. And we get to rediscover our childhood. Star Wars is probably the biggest example of this because, you know, John, you and I grew up in the generation where the original trilogy was huge. Mandy, your generation was the prequel trilogy. So Force Awakens comes out. And that's like both of us get a shot at it.
Yep.
You know, and that doesn't happen much, but we thought that would be a fun topic to talk about because
Dora came back.
Well, that was kind of like the launching pad, but Dora wasn't big for me, but I know it was for a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. And you see people in the theater that were taking their kids because they grew up on Dora. And I think that's pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the biggest moment for you when a childhood hero came back to life in entertainment? And why did it matter to you?
For me, the biggest moment that I can remember, with the exception of Star Wars, would have to be when I knew Optimus Prime was going to be an active living creature on a movie screen for me. When I knew that they were making Transformers, I was thrilled because, sure, yeah, Star Wars was a big deal for me, but if I'm going to be keeping it all 100, I think Transformers might have been even a bigger deal for me because of Optimus Prime. He was somebody that I wanted to be like when I was a kid. I knew I would never be able to transform into a big ass truck, but he was honorable, awesome to watch on screen, and just a great, great character. And yeah, as soon as I knew he was going to be on the screen for these movies, and then all my friends who were excited about it as well, it just started becoming this fervor of, we can't wait to go see this movie. And there was an army of us that showed up for this. It was even bigger than like the group that we went to Star Wars with. It was that big.
I mean, you kept saying, with the exception of Star Wars. So that would imply to me that Star Wars was bigger.
Well, it is, but I didn't... Well, actually, no, let me rephrase that. It's not bigger. It's equally as impactful, but... It's one of those things that for me was a given. And you already brought it up at the beginning of the when you were talking about it, that you and I, Star Wars is a big deal for us. And I didn't want to go ahead and repeat any more of that. And I wanted this to touch on something that was as much, or if not, maybe a little bit more fun and exciting for me, which Optimus Prime, come on.
So really he did Transformers with an honorable mention of Star Wars.
I think because I already mentioned it.
I was just kidding.
But right. But kind of throwing it back to Star Wars, and I feel like that is one we should talk about, because that's one that really applies mm-hmm. to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That has a really unique one, because when Phantom Menace came out, I thought it was okay when I walked out. Like, there are moments in it where I felt it was great, but it wasn't something that stuck with me. I hated the second movie, really liked the third one of the prequels. But none of those gave me any of the feeling that the original trilogy did. And then Force Awakens came out and got me just as excited all over again, which I really felt wouldn't be possible simply for the fact that I didn't like the previous three movies. What do you guys say to that? I mean, do you think it's just because J.J. Abrams managed to touch on every little Star Wars bone in my body?
I think it's one part that, but also... Like, I enjoyed the prequels, and I actually liked the prequels a lot up until I got tired of having to defend those movies, because I always felt like those movies were something that I had to make a concession for as far as people being so upset with it. But the story that J.J. Abrams gave us was something that was simplified. It brought us back to the roots of what Star Wars was, and that's what made it so much better and more enjoyable, because it was a simplified story versus something where you have a little bit of a romance and you have all this intrigue and political stuff and it's a trade war and all this other crap that was going on. This is back to good versus evil, and that's a story that people can grab onto easier than the rest of it.
Yeah, and it was a way to, at that point, you had a lot more time to go by. People had created families, and now those children of, like, yours and your John's age, like, people are now grown and able to experience that with you again. And I think that made a big difference for people who were going back to see Star Wars, because they had a whole new generation to watch their eyes light up to it. You got to really, I mean, their marketing was also fantastic. Like, let's be honest.
It was, but the whole time I'm sitting there, my fingers are crossed, like, I can't do another prequel. Well, I can't do that again.
Yeah, but I mean, it was more of like a reimagining. And
Misa can't handle it.
Stop that, because I like Misa, and I also like the prequels.
Okay. You like Jar Jar?
I do.
Really?
Yeah.
I swear, you know what? Maybe if you're, that was the first Star Wars movie you saw, maybe that would be a big difference.
I also played the games a lot on Sony PlayStation. So I think that helped, like...
Misa didn't.
It helped reinforce my adoration for those. But partly what John was saying, and also I really feel like having it come back to life at a different point in your life, when you're able to experience it with multiple generations of people who are now at different points in their lives, that really has an impact. And that's what this is all about, is having these stories come back to us at a later time and still being special to us.
So what's the biggest moment for you when one came back to life?
So I'm going to have to go then with the Scooby-Doo, because that was one that came out on my birthday, and my grandma took me to see it. And even though she fell asleep in the movie theater, it was really exciting because it was like our special day and we got to go see this movie. And it was seeing Scooby-Doo, which was like a family thing. Like, it was passed down through like the family or whatever, that it was just a very special piece of pop culture and entertainment, and that got passed to me. And so now I'm getting to revisit it with one of my heroes, which was Sarah Michelle Gellar, because Buffy is like my childhood hero. And so this was a way for me to like, I got her in something different, but also in something that was still really special to me in another way. So they kind of combined. And then I got to see it with my grandma on my birthday, which was like amazing. So I can still picture like the movie theater, and I have a terrible memory. I don't remember what I did last week, but I can still picture the movie theater, and I can still hear my grandma snoring.
She slept through it?
She fell asleep.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, but it was still really cool.
My biggest moment was Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Now, I know people don't like the movie.
Ugh.
Hey, don't ugh me. Let me finish my story.
Okay.
Yeah, let him have... He's got the talking stick. Don't do anything right yet.
It doesn't matter to me that the movie isn't great. I think the movie's fine. I don't think it's awful. I just don't think it's good. It's just like somewhere in the middle. It's an okay movie. Don't care. This is a great moment for me because I got to go and see Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones is my idol since I was a kid. When I first saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, I asked for an Indiana Jones hat for Christmas. And my Uncle Denny got me an Indiana Jones hat, got me a fedora for Christmas. And I ran around the entire year with a fedora and a cheap-ass belt and tried to make a whip everywhere I went. And my mom used to call me Illinois Pete. That was like her nickname. I was always, because I'm from Illinois. Illinois Pete, Illinois Pete. Come here, Illinois Pete. You know, she still to this day will call me Illinois Pete. So I love Indiana Jones. And my mom took me to all the Indiana Jones movies. So I saw them all with her. And I had been idolizing Indiana Jones since then. I watched all the movies like 1,000 times. He was coming back. I was so excited. I was stoked this is what so many people felt when they went and saw Star Wars, when they went and saw Lord of the Rings, when they went and saw Harry Potter, whatever it is, that's what they felt like. I got to go see this movie with my mom and dad, both my kids, and a whole theater, but mostly 3 generations of my family got to watch the thing that I love most in the world on a big screen. So even though we walk out of there and the movie wasn't the most wonderful thing ever, I got to see it with my family. And you never know if that experience will ever repeat again. I mean, yeah, they're going to make another one. You don't know who's going to be around. I might not even be around. You just don't know who's going to be around. So that, to me, is absolutely worth the experience. And I got to watch the movie. My mom got to watch my eyes glaze over. She was even holding my hand during the movie because, you know, it's special.
Aw.
Very, very special. So
that's very sweet.
Don't care how bad the movie... You could come at me all day and be like, the movie's awful. I'm like, not to me. Not to me. Can't kill my dreams. That was great. One of my best days ever.
Can I keep it 100% real with you?
Sure.
I actually like that movie.
So do I. See? Minus 2 okay. scenes. I think that it's a good movie.
Yeah, they just took a little bit of a weird turn.
I'm actually fine with the aliens.
Really?
I don't like they showed the spaceship, but I'm fine with the aliens.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would probably co-sign that, actually. I'm fine with the aliens. I didn't need to see the spaceship.
That's where they went one step too far. Just one step too far. And the monkeys. The monkeys were definitely... And Indiana Jones doesn't ride bitch on a motorcycle. Sorry. He just doesn't. All right. So are there any other top experiences in your lifetime? This is where you can throw your honorable mentions if you had any.
All right. So one of them is Power Rangers, the movie that came out like a couple years ago, I think it was.
Really?
Yeah. I used to watch it all the time when I was little with my brother. And he's like 4 years older than me. So it's not like we had common interests, but it was because he was my big brother. And it was like whatever he liked, I would try to like. It was just one of those dynamics. And the really cool thing was when that movie came out, I got to take my nephew, who was about my age when I saw Power Rangers with my brother. And it's my brother's son. And we got to go watch Power Rangers together. So it was like a really cool moment where I got to take my nephew and it was like reliving it because he's a replica of my brother. So they kind of like had the same favorites and the same moments that they enjoyed, even though it was a very different reimagination of the original like show. But so that was a really cool moment for me. I liked it.
That's very cool. I really actually love that Power Rangers movie. I'm sad that they're not making any more of them.
Really? It wasn't like super great, but it really wasn't that bad either. It was an all right Power Rangers movie.
What a sales pitch.
Jesus Christ.
What a sales pitch. It really wasn't.
Like, here I am. Yo, I really loved the movie. It was fun. I had a good time. You're like, yeah, it's okay, stupid. It's fine. I mean, if you like into that sort of thing, I know it's what I brought up, but it's, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, it was definitely more the moment than the movie for me.
John, you got any other ones?
Oh, boy. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to use this spot as my chance to bring up Force Awakens as being one of my more memorable and enjoyable moments in the theater. It was something that I was excited about, but I was a little bit worried at the same time. I got to see the movie with my wife, and I got to see it with a couple of good friends, and it was something that I really enjoyed the experience in the theater. People cheered, people screamed, and it had been a while since I've been in a movie where people were being that boisterous and loud. And I really loved that moment, especially being there with Boss Lady was good time for me.
I'm going to throw one toward Transformers. You already mentioned them, but Transformers was a big one for me, but I won't repeat it because you already did it. So G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe was actually, surprisingly, one that I was really excited for. Like, really pumped for. I loved G.I. Joe as a kid, man. I had so many of those stupid action figures with the kung fu grip and everything else. And I kicked a lot of ass on a backyard, in a random backyard and fields left and right with those G.I. Joe figures, where we would attach parachutes to them and throw them around the field. And you'd run it at your buddy, and he's holding yours and he's holding his. And then, you know, you just have like a fake fight on the field yard or on the playground or something. It was just, it's weird, but that's what kids do. We didn't have all the goddamn technology. We had to think and be creative and
use our imagination,
whatever that is. We used those and just had to live life, and it was great.
We had to build the bases out of cardboard boxes and mounds of sand.
Yes, exactly. You know what, sometimes you had to do, because I was poor, so you maybe go to a garage sale and get like a Barbie dream house, and you'd have to transform that into a compound, make a base out of that shit, and you'd do it and you'd like it, and then you'd throw Barbie in there just to shake things up. Even though back then, boys don't play with Barbies. Oh, yes, we did. Yes, we did. And we gave them camo.
Well, your man's got to have a woman.
No, that woman was a fighter. She got a gun, too. Everybody got a gun in that base. Yeah.
That's what Lady Jane and Scarlet were all
exactly.
about.
Exactly. Because I couldn't afford them, but I had extra Barbies, so they got camo, and they got to be my Scarlet and my... Yeah. Any other ones, Amanda?
There was a time when I went to go see Rear Window. It was like they brought it back to theaters for an anniversary. They kind of do those Fandango special.
The greatest
events.
Movie of all time?
Yeah, as some would say. And that was like a cool moment because, well, like, I admire Alfred Hitchcock and I respect like all of his movies and his work. And so that is something as like a film lover to see that kind of back in my life as an adult. To actually see it on the screen, because I definitely wasn't alive to see it on screen when it first came out. So sure. To have that was like a really cool moment, and I got to see it with my family. So that was something that I've remembered for a while too.
Anything else, John?
Yeah, Voltron, Defender of the Universe, the most recent animated version that came out on Netflix only. Okay. I really loved, like, Voltron was another one of those cartoons that I really loved growing up, and when I knew that DreamWorks was bringing it to Netflix, and all of a sudden I sit down and I watch it, and they not only did they bring Voltron back, but they added a depth to it that the original show never had, a story to it that was phenomenal, and it became this quite beautiful space opera. It was something that by the end of the series, it would actually bring me to tears, just because I was just so invested in these characters that a single teardrop would drop. It was just great, and it was wonderful, and I can't suggest people watch that enough.
Hmm. Aww, that's very cool. And I would I will co-sign, that's John's term, on Scooby-Doo, because I really do love the Scooby-Doo cartoon. And the first movie was pretty good.
It was really good. Oh my God, that was
good. You sound like a dog. Nice job.
Thank you, Aaron.
It's the second movie that's like talking dirty to me. Go easy.
His clothes are already starting to come off. Take it easy.
I'm getting a little sweaty.
Aaron, let's go look for a mystery.
my last one, really good, which is pretty close to Indiana Jones, honestly. Is Spider-Man. When the first Spider-Man came out, I actually said, screw school, went to Spider-Man opening day. My son is a diehard Spider-Man fan as well. And we've had our issues over the years about, you know, like fathers and sons do. But for those couple of hours, there was no problems, nothing between us. There was no issues. There was none of that father versus son or son versus father animosity that can sometimes exist. And we completely understood each other, I think, on a spiritual level. because it was both of our first time seeing Spider-Man actually fly through the sky, not Nicholas Hammond crawling on the floor and they turned the camera in the 70s, which is what they did. This was the real Spider-Man. One of my favorite directors of all time, Sam Raimi's behind it. Mm-hmm. You have what to me is still a great Peter Parker. You have Uncle Ben, back when there wasn't Uncle Ben. Everything about that movie clicked. The only problem was the Green Goblin mask, and it wasn't enough of a detractor to care, make me care one way or the other. It was a wonderful experience, and to spend it with my son was a very important, I think, experience in our relationship. Not only that, but I finally got to see my Spider-Man, like what I grew up thinking Spider-Man would look like. And I'd played a bunch of video games where it was kind of, but it didn't come close to that. And now I finally got to see it and feel like I was actually swinging with him. And, you know, being in that theater with so many people that were seeing it for the first time too, and that were obviously fans like me, that was an incredible experience. Not quite Indiana Jones level, but it's close. It was pretty close.
So what you're saying is your childhood is significantly more important than you and your kid.
Well, Indy was me and my kids and my mom and my dad.
Oh, that's true. Dang it. You got me.
So.
You got me.
Nice,
you got me.
Nice try.
Wait, that is the weirdest thing to try to get him on.
Well, I was trying to catch him in his thing.
I don't know what you're trying to catch, because either one is winning.
Well, because I forgot that your kids and your parents went with you to the Indy.
Yeah, they did. They hung out. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But thanks for listening the first time. Dang it. So what's the worst example?
Wait, I had one more.
Oh, we don't care anymore.
What?
Yeah, because you just tried to pull a gotcha on him for no good goddamn reason.
And it was really bad, too. It was like it blew up in my face.
What's your last one?
My last one is Veronica Mars. I have to mention this.
Hey, John, did you see that one coming?
I mean, I'm blinded by the light on this one. So
wrapped up like a douche.
What?
I'm pretty sure that's what the lyrics.
That's what didn't you? Do you listen to him ever?
I know, but it keeps taking me by surprise when he says it.
You know, whenever you say "but" after you say something, it usually means whatever you said first doesn't matter.
I don't think that's true.
That's 100% accurate.
I really care about you.
When
but
you say "but," it negates everything that came before it.
That's all I'm going to hear now when somebody says something.
You've
and
never
they say
heard
but.
This saying?
No.
You're so intelligent. It shocks me that some of the things you aren't aware of. I don't understand.
Yeah. Okay. Geography and history, put that on your list too. But anyway, so Veronica Mars.
But the whole thing with "but" isn't geography or history.
No, I'm saying like he can add that to the list of things that I'm not
educated on. I don't know much
on.
About history. Continue. I don't know much about biology either.
So Veronica Mars was like, as I got a little bit older, that was like my reinvented Buffy, like my new hero as I got older. Not that Buffy ever really went away, but Veronica Mars was very special to me because she and her father shared a similar relationship that I shared with my father. So I was always able to kind of see that there. And she was
he solved crimes.
I wish. My dad would be so much cooler if he did that shit.
Just like run around solving crimes.
No, but he had this similar humor and like the similar dynamic where like they're really like sassy with each other, but they care a lot about each other and are willing to do whatever they need to and overstep their boundaries and, you know, father-daughter stuff. But then she was also just like somebody I really wanted to be. Like I had my mom get me a camera because I wanted to be a photographer. And I don't even think I ever actually used the camera. I think my mom kept it because I didn't really do anything with it. But it was just like one of those things where like you feel empowered by what that person is and what they represent and what they're doing, and you want to be more like them. So to have Veronica Mars come back as an adult some years later as like a grown woman, to see her as still not a perfect person was a really great representation, I felt, to show that not everybody has to have it all together by a certain age. And I feel like most shows try to show that women, like, you have to have your shit together by a certain time. And it's like, here Veronica Mars is. She's still herself. She's grown in a lot of ways, but she's a little bit different.
All right. And a little bit fair enough. Now, how about the worst example?
Ugh.
John,
the one that comes to mind at the very worst example of something like this is MacGyver.
Oh, the TV show?
Yeah.
Oh, you hate the TV show, huh?
The reboot of MacGyver, I watched the first three episodes trying to give it my three episode rule, and it did not feel like MacGyver. It was not what I was used to. It didn't seem to care as much about the science as the original TV show did. It didn't seem to care about the fact that, like, what kind of character MacGyver was. You have this kid who thinks he's some sort of rock star. I don't know. It just didn't work for me, and that's my worst.
I'll tell you, this is how much I know about MacGyver, because I think I saw one episode, and I was like, I was never big on MacGyver. I liked MacGyver. I was never close. My best friend growing up, Dennis, watched MacGyver all the time. This is a guy who doesn't watch TV, doesn't watch movies, hardly ever, but he never missed an episode of MacGyver, ever. So he was stoked when they announced they're going to do like another MacGyver. He watched 10 minutes, and he just called me and goes, "Hey, I just watched about like 10, 15 minutes of the new MacGyver." I'm like, "Oh, yeah? What do you think?" He's like, "Nope." And then he just stopped watching it. So I'll always remember that. That's my review of MacGyver. That's all I have to go on. Would you agree with that review?
Absolutely. I didn't dig that show at all. It was, I didn't like the chemistry. I didn't like the character. The guy playing Pete, who I liked from CSI, I did not like in this role. So yeah, I completely agree.
All right. That's going to be my new review system. Nope.
Nope.
Well, mine is Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Mm.
That is the worst frickin' return to my childhood I can think of. And it might sound weird to mention Halloween as a hero, but I love that movie as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much more to me about filmmaking and how he did so much with so little. And, you know, it's just one of the greatest horror films of all time for a lot of various reasons, not the least of which is the theme. But so many other factors. And when I heard they were updating it, I thought that would be a cool idea. I am never against remakes. If you can bring something new or cool to it, when you're doing something iconic like that, it's always a risk. But Rob Zombie is one of those guys who I was interested in. And his previous films were interesting. They really took horror to different avenues. And I was curious as to what he would do. And apparently Rob Zombie didn't care what I or anyone else thought about the franchise. And decided he was going to wipe his ass with my childhood. And I'm still pretty ticked about it. And what made it worse is then he made a part two. And then he pissed on my childhood too. So it's just like, stop doing all these gross things to my childhood. Stop ruining it. And thankfully they took him away from it. And Halloween is in better hands now. But he really... I was audibly angry walking out of Halloween.
I can agree. It was terrible. That's almost as bad for me. That's the equivalent of the Freddy Nightmare on Elm Street remake. Because when I saw that the first time, when I saw the original, I was petrified for years. It was one of the only movies that could have ever scared me. And then when I saw the remake, I literally walked out of the theater and I was like, I'm not scared of Freddy anymore. That's how bad that movie was. So I feel your pain on people screwing up your horror-themed movies.
But it can be done. The Friday 13th mm-hmm. remake was really good. I would have loved to have seen more of those. But
well, staying on the horror theme, mine is Poltergeist.
The remake is awful.
It was so bad. This was one of the things where it was like, okay, I watched this movie as a child over and over again. We would go to Blockbuster and I think I've even told the story on here before.
Why not just buy it?
I didn't have money. I was like 7 years old, okay, six
I'm
maybe.
Just saying, it seems like a good move. Buy it if you're going to keep going and getting it.
I guess you
was
you
it wanna... like when, was it like when my mom with the movie The Kindred, where she kept renting it, thinking she hadn't seen it, but she'd actually rented it every time.
No, it was
like she had Alzheimer's for one movie.
So I was allowed to, from my recollection, I was allowed to go in and I could look through the movies and I could pick a movie out. Like that was part of the Blockbuster routine and with my family, and so I would go in there. And I even distinctly remember...
I didn't mean like I was actually asking the question.
Oh, wow. Ouch. Okay. Never mind. So anyway, so Poltergeist was one of those where I just kept wanting to re-rent it and re-watch it and revisit it. And so I was very excited to see this come back to life because... And it's hard to... I guess the same token, it's hard to say that that's like a hero, but it meant so much to me because I had so much nostalgia with it. And it was like a part of my childhood, and it's one of the things that really got me invested into movies like that. And it just did so much for me. And when I went to go see the remake, I saw it with my father, who took me to Blockbuster all those years. And man, I just remember walking out of it so, like, because you know when you leave a theater, because it was a group of us that went to, but like you leave a theater And everybody wants to talk about, like, what'd you think about it? What did you feel? Like, blah, 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 blah. So you start to talk about it. And obviously with remakes, you compare it. I didn't even want to have the conversation. Like, I just wanted to go home. I was so annoyed.
Like, piss off, bitches. I'm out.
It was to that point. I was like, I can't believe I was so excited for this. I got so hyped for it. And it was just crap.
Well, real quick, are there any heroes left you do want to see come back to life that haven't yet?
I mean, in some form, it would be nice to see Buffy come back, just because I don't, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar Buffy would be really cool. Or even if, like, the original movie came back with the
I would Christy watch Swanson. Christy Swanson do anything she wants to do.
Like, that would be really cool to me, or some sort of a
better
reinvention.
Buffy anyway.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want it to be like a Charmed thing. Like, I would want the people that was like my other one. Oh, God, that was so bad. But like, you want the if something comes back, you don't want the original people to be upset about it or feel like it's doing an injustice. So it's really hard to say, like, I want something to come back. I would need to make sure that, like, all of the OG people were cool with it.
Very cool. The ones that I could actually come up with in my mind when I think about this is that I really hope we get a Mask movie soon.
Based off Jim Carrey or the cartoon?
Yes.
Mobile Armored Strike Command.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
Take mine back.
No, screw that. That was cool. Yeah, I'm good with it.
Yeah. I really want to see that come back in a form of a movie. That was one of those cartoons that I loved to watch. I actually bought the series a couple years ago, and I rewatch it every now and again. They're terrible, but there's also so much fun being able to see these cars do all these funky stuff. And the other stuff that I was really interested in, if they could ever do this, would be a Quantum Leap revival. Not necessarily a remake, but a revival. Bring Scott Bakula back, bring Dean Stockwell back, and do Quantum Leap.
I can see that easily.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on one of those CSI shows, and he still looks good. He could still do it.
Yeah, he could definitely still do it.
I want to see Briscoe County Jr. come back in some form. I would love to see a reunion movie of some sort where Bruce Campbell's still playing Briscoe County. I think that would be fun. Starsky and Hutch, I want a reunion. I don't want a reunion. I want, because I think one of them's dead. But I want to see, like, a serious version. They did the comedy with Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson. That's not Starsky and Hutch. So I want to see the actual Starsky and Hutch. Simon and Simon is one I would love to see rebooted. Wouldn't that be a fun film franchise?
Absolutely. Did you ever see the shot-for-shot remake of the intro with John Hamm and...
Yes. Yeah, I did see that like a year or two ago, or like a little while ago.
Yeah, it was like a year or two, year or three ago. It was John Hamm and...
somebody else. Doesn't matter.
Just seeing that, and then it makes me excited for the idea of doing a shot, or like a remake of that show.
Yeah, that would be fun. And you know what else I'd like to see, John? You're the only one that's going to appreciate this, because Mana's never heard of this or seen it. She might have heard it, but she's never seen it.
Manimal!
How did you know he was going to say that?
I was guessing. Really?
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God, yes!
Manimal is on my list. Come look, it's on my list.
Oh my God.
That was really creepy.
It's an awesome bad show.
I think you two have been spending too much
time
together.
It's one of those shows where if that technology would have been there, that could have been awesome. Basically, a shapeshifter is like solving crimes and shit. I loved it.
Oh, yeah. I love that show. The guy turned into a hawk. They kept on calling it eagle. No, it's a red-tailed hawk, you morons. he turned into a panther, any like muskrat, you know, anything. He turned into it. Yeah, I love that show.
Science never made sense. Like, how do you get so small? You're a big guy. How do you get so tiny? Doesn't matter. Manimal.
You know what surprises me, Aaron, that you didn't choose Sherlock Holmes as like one of your mentions of like a significant...
Because he's been redone like 1,000 times. And
I know, but it's just like...
Is this
them.
Another gotcha moment? This feels like another gotcha moment.
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm kind of surprised, like, Sherlock Holmes didn't come up at
he
all.
He's one of my favorite characters,
heroes.
But he's never stopped being remade, so it's not true. Like, you know. But if I had to pick one, young Sherlock Holmes. That's the best.
Ooh, oh God. I wish we could go back in time.
That was a
and
fun
get more
moment.
Of that.
Yep. I would love to see more and more and more of that.
You know, back to the Simon and Simon, it would have to be placed in the 80s. None of this making it a 90s show or I'm
yes.
sorry, what decade am I right now? None of this of making it a 2019 show. Make it an 80s show.
Yes.
That would be great.
I would love it. And they had to wear the same suits and everything else. Oh, I would love that. I love that show. All right. What are some of our listeners? We asked our listeners. We have a few in our Facebook group. You can always join the Facebook group. It's The Hollywood Outsider on Facebook. And we post the topic in there and we grab some responses from there. I've got one from Scott Calgaro. He says, got to be the A-Team. I was a huge fan of the series and had zero interest in the movie, but the trailer convinced me to give it a shot. It was a home run. By far the best remake of 80s material ever. I don't know about ever, but it was pretty damn good.
Yeah, it was pretty damn good. They flew a tank.
Yeah. I'm worried. Bradley Cooper was amazing in that movie. Two more I got listener ones. I've got one from Tracy Heinrichs who said, My Little Pony made a huge comeback and with the culture and the audience.
Yep.
They became like a whole thing, right? The bronies or whatever.
Yeah, it was a cultural icon of the 2010s. Weird.
It's kind of weird because they weren't an icon when I was a kid, but teens, whatever, however old I was. Lastly, Rita Agrella, she says, the Jumanji reboot sequel, I absolutely love the original as a kid. The new one is fun, but the magic seems to be missing for me.
It's just very different.
Let's have a moment for Robin Williams. Oh.
Don't make jokes.
I'm not making jokes.
All right, so Nate Bruce, before we offend somebody.
No, the magic of that movie was very much Robin Williams, I think, in the original, because he just had that Robin Williams magic. Jumanji is great in its own way. It's a different thing.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that. Part of the magic was that the Jumanji was creeping into our world, and then, yeah, Robin Williams brought it all alive, but you have this other thing that's just an action adventure thing that kind of plays with video game tropes. So they are two different animals. Speaking of two different animals that are unfair to judge against each other, Jennifer Maloney says, I didn't see the remake of Ghostbusters. Looked pretty terrible compared to the original. Jennifer, you're a sweet and lovely woman, but you shouldn't judge a movie that you haven't seen.
Truth bomb.
I'm just going to say, bless your heart.
Oh boy, he pulled the Southern charm on you.
Wow.
I respect your opinion. She's active in our group. I respect her very much. I don't like when anybody has an opinion about something they haven't actually seen. That movie was actually pretty good. You might like it, you might hate it, but I really liked it. So
I find it easier to find more people who enjoyed that than the people who actually didn't enjoy it. Which I can count on one hand, the people that I know didn't enjoy it. Anyhow, she goes on to say,
you know, I would say the people that didn't enjoy it for the most part are people that walked in already planning
wanting to not
enjoy it.
Well, if you are, yeah, you're right. If you're building the movie off the idea that you were seeing something in the original Ghostbuster universe, that's where part of the mistake is because that was building a whole new Ghostbusters universe for a whole new time, is what this movie was doing. Anywho, she goes on to say, for something good, I actually love the remake of Footloose. It had all the charm of the original, just set in a newer time. I didn't see that movie, but I will take your word for it, and I will maybe sometime give it a try.
I will tell you, she's absolutely correct. That remake is actually a lot of fun.
Very cool. Okay, Nate Bruce goes on to say, I loved He-Man cartoons, which, yeah, I did too. But Masters of the Universe was just bad. You know, I've probably seen that movie 100 times, and it doesn't get any better.
Are you being serious?
Yeah, I just watched it last week.
Oh, boy.
It was horrible. What the hell are you talking about?
It is terrible. It is like I don't know. This is what's one of those craps from the 80s that they're like, you know what? We're going to slap the Masters of the Universe name on it and people are going to go see it. And that's all it was because it was, let's bring in like only one. Well, you have Evil Lyn, Skeletor, and then Beastman, and then nobody else from the cartoon is there as far as the bad guys are concerned. And then you have three main good guys. It's dumb. Just dumb, 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 dumb.
Magic. Absolute magic. I love it. The movie's horrible, though.
Well,
I love the show. I love the cartoon.
It doesn't stop me from watching it,
by the power of Grayskull.
Well, Nick Brown, and this is a little controversial between Aaron's pick and his.
No, he's just wrong.
Okay. He said, Crystal Skull, need I say more? Hashtag I win the internet. Hashtag next topic. LOL. I actually confirmed with him if it was his best or worst. Because we put the topic as both, and he confirmed worst.
That's too bad you got that one wrong, buddy. You know, next time you'll understand. Maybe you went by yourself. See, I went surrounded by people that love me.
Sean Coates, Coties, however you say that name. Terminator Genesis.
Or at least I think they do.
They tried to go the X-Men Days of Future Past route and failed. They just breezed through T1 and T2 in the first 10 minutes and took a huge dump on their legacy while they were at it. As for good, that has to go to Blade Runner 2049. They added to the overall lore of that universe and made you rethink the first film in a good way. It's a good pick. I like 2049.
Oh, can I tackle both of those?
Ooh, go ahead.
Real quick. All right, so what was the first one?
Terminator Genisys.
Yeah, wrong. Terminator Salvation. That was awful. That was shit. That was an awful movie. And they said John Connor 47 times because they forgot what his name was, apparently. They have to keep reminding him. Awful movie that burned it first. Number two, what was the second one?
The second one is Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, it was as equally boring as the first movie. So,
no!
Yeah, looked stunning. Bored shitless.
It was very long.
Let me do an impression of that movie.
That's the entire score,
you
soundtrack,
guys are shitting
dialogue.
All over listener comments today.
Sometimes they're facts. Sometimes they're facts.
Oh boy.
That's all I remember from that movie.
I remember somebody made the argument Blade Runner 2049 deserved to be best picture last year, and I just started laughing out loud, and they took that as the worst offense they'd ever heard. Like, what kind of disrespectful shit? You're supposed to be a movie critic. Yeah, I like movies, and that one sucked. I don't know what to tell you.
Hey, that's my joke.
I just made it. Can I take that? Can I borrow it?
No.
Yeah, you can borrow it.
What? Oh,
I just remade his childhood. It's mine. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
I don't think it makes sense.
We are so fiery on all pistons tonight. It's amazing.
End this show. Any recent film or TV recommend? Thanks, everybody, for writing in. I'm glad that we're here to honor your choices. Any recent film or TV recommendations not previously talked about? I did see Brian Banks, which is Aldous Hodge playing the character Brian Banks. I will tell you, because like I said earlier, I don't read other critics' reviews until after I've seen a movie. I read a lot of reviews that were harping on this movie because it's quote-unquote the wrong movie during the Me Too movement.
What?
Well, because this is a guy who was wrongfully accused of rape, and he was later found to be a false...
Oh, the football player story.
Yeah, the football player story. It's a really sad, but great, ultimately great story for him. And where he finally was able to prove that the statement, that the claim of rape was false, and he was able to be exonerated because she lied, you know. And a couple of the reviews were like, gave it a negative review because it's the wrong movie for the Me Too movie. No, I just want to say, like, I know this story and I knew it going in, and I got to say, I would argue that Brian Banks and the Brian Banks of the world are on the same side as rape victims. They're people whose power has been taken away from them in a wrong,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, those can coexist in society. And I really feel like if you see the movie, it's not the greatest movie in the history. Aldous Hodge does a great job. Greg Kinnear does a great job. It's a very good movie. But I really feel like these are the kind of movies, we need movies like that to show both sides of a story. Because women should be taken seriously, absolutely. That doesn't negate his truth either. Which is that he went to jail. He served a lot of years for a crime he didn't commit and had his entire dream taken from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a story that's important.
It is important. And I think there is a way for you to coexist the concept of believing women, but also not to the point where you don't consider facts and research and that there are other possibilities. But I don't, I understand there's hesitancy on being afraid that this will take away from believability of victims, of, you know, real victims who have experienced this trauma. But I also agree that this is important for people to who have also lost a lot of their life for something that they did not do or did not want to have happen to them. And they were innocent and they lost a lot themselves and they wanted their truth and their story shared.
I think stories like this on both sides of those totem poles should definitely be shared.
Absolutely.
They actually preach to, they have a whole section where one character speaks for rape victims, which I thought was
that's good. That's, yeah, you know, it's important, I think, that they still include that. And
it's
also
a crazy story, too. It's a crazy story. Like, how he got exonerated is crazy.
Mm, interesting.
But you guys see anything?
Yeah.
What?
I saw Fleabag. I'm on season two now. And that show, like, I didn't know if I was going to be into it. It took me, like, because the episodes are pretty short. So it took me, like, the first episode before I could decide for sure if I was going to be invested in it. And it's really funny in like a weird way. And then it takes a very dark turn in the second season. And the only reason I started to watch this is because one of our listeners, Angela, like was preaching in the group about how like this is literally probably the second season is one of her favorite seasons of television ever. And so I actually wanted to give it a try just for that. And I'll be honest, that second season, like so far, is really, really great.
There's only six episodes and they're like a half hour. So
they're short.
Yeah, you should be able to knock it out.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. It's a pretty clever show.
I liked it.
What about you, John? Anything?
I watched La Llorona, and it was a creepy movie. I really enjoyed it, and I really love watching Linda Cardellini do stuff, and I think I have to sit down and watch it again, but yeah, it was definitely worth the rental fee.
By the way, she's, ironically, the best part about Scooby-Doo.
I would say that's unironically.
Okay. Whichever way, she's the best part about that Scooby-Doo movie, because I didn't realize it was her until years later. I'm like, Velma got hot. Zoinkies.
Velma was always hot.
Yeah.
In the cartoon?
You know, it's dressed up. She's got very little detail to her face. You know, every live-action Velma I've ever seen, hot.
That's because they're at, like, Halloween parties where it's some co-ed who just...
Yikes.
Zoinkies. I think it's Zoinkies.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. All right, you can comment on this episode in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is TheHollywoodOutsider.com or email us feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Subscribe on Pandora. We're on Pandora now. Spotify, your preferred podcast app. Remember, if you use the Hollywood Outsider app, we're probably going to be disbanding that at the end of August, so keep an eye on that. Switch to one of the other podcast providers before then. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at RJohnDraws. No more dot. He ditched the dot. The dot is gone.
No dot.
No dots.
No dot.
Amanda and Veronica's Marshmallows and me and my other podcast, Smirk, and The Blacklist Exposed, as well as presenting Hitchcock. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy some popcorn.
So how many subscribers do you think we're going to lose this time?
Quite a few.